Today is Wednesday, April 15th, as we all know, 2015. And you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We're going to try out a little experiment today. We'll be speaking. Our guest today is Cassidy Sharp with Greenpeace, with a recap of the amazing and extraordinary action. Greenpeace is known for some of these things, so is Sea Shepherd, but this recent boarding and occupying of a shell, an octagonally shaped, extremely awkward, cumbersome Shell Oil drilling platform destined for the Chukchi Sea. They boarded it and as I said, camped out on it 6 days in extraordinary weather, terrible seas, and the supplies were difficult, if not absolutely unavailable. Then they returned to the ship Esperanza, and Cassidy Sharp is going to join us in just a moment, if all of this works out okay, to talk with you about that, let you know exactly where we are now and what Greenpeace's next move is going to be. So hang on, and let's see what we can do here. And away we go. So if you haven't seen the video yet, it's very much worth having a look. It's pretty much... of all of these things, as I said before, watching them board, they're finally in the end and rappel down the side of the ship and got back in the Zodiacs and returned to the Esperanza. And now Greenpeace is, as always, moving forward and taking this action to the next stage. We welcome right now Cassidy Sharp. Thank you so much for joining us. You would be one of the Arctic specialists at Greenpeace. Here, I am going to let you take it away now. Go ahead.
Just kind of wrapping up an exciting week last week when the six volunteer activists were on the Polar Pioneer, and that was a really exciting moment where we were able to really shine a light on their plans and the fact that Shell was on its way to Seattle, which is, as most people know, sort of a hotbed right now for a really strong movement to voice opposition Shell's plans, not only to house their Arctic drilling fleet in Seattle, but of course to then move north and drill in Alaska this summer. So we're just excited now to sort of pass this really great movement from what happened last week in the middle of the Pacific Ocean now to Seattle, which is a really exciting time to be a part of this movement against Arctic drilling and other, you know, really risky extraction projects.
Well, Shell seems determined to do this, and apparently President Obama has not heard requests, pleas, demands that this be stopped, and that whatever is under the sea and under the ground be left there. So what's the where is the Esperanza right now? Back in Seattle in port, or continuing the chase?
No, the activists are back on board the Esperanza and getting some well-earned rest, and it is now on its way to just, I'm not exactly sure where it will probably end up. It needs to, get some basic just kind of maintenance after such a long journey across the Pacific. So it is not exactly chasing the Blue Marlin anymore, which is the carrier that the Polar Pioneer was on. And it's just kind of heading back possibly to go farther north. After a ship makes such a long journey, it kind of needs to take a minute to rest and that sort of thing. So, yep, it's just on its way through the Pacific, possibly up to Canada, where we have a ship crew waiting for.
So you, before this, the action on the drilling platform, you had to track this thing down across thousands of miles of open seas. How long did that take?
You mind asking that again?
I'm sorry. You tracked this before they actually boarded this thing. You had to track it across thousands of miles of open sea. How long did the tracking process take?
Any time that these rigs and equipment, it's all updated on a database, so anybody can really see where they are in the world. So it probably took, it also moves quite slowly. It's a behemoth of a thing. So we probably tracked it, and of course that was all public. Before the activists actually boarded the Polar Pioneer, we made it very well known that we were there. So I think that was probably about a month process, starting in March. And it left a shipyard in Malaysia, actually, and went all the way across the Pacific. So it's been a long journey, for sure. And we called it the crossing because we were very much crossing the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. So no doubt that Greenpeace will continue to engage in actions to draw attention to the folly of attempting to drill in these in the oceans. Isn't this the second time that Shell has built one of these? This is the second platform. The other one pretty much almost broke up in terrible seas. It nearly was grounded, I believe, at one point. What has Shell had to say? I honestly am probably not up to the absolute moment with following what Shell's statements have been. But what in your opinion is Shell doing right now to keep moving this thing north and to fend off an angry public?
Mm-hmm. Right. So no matter what Shell says about its plans and its improvements for its equipment, all we really have to do is look at the history of their activities in the Arctic thus far, which have been completely disastrous. So in 2012, you're right, the Colic was completely grounded and on its way to Dutch Harbor. And that was actually to avoid taxes right around New Year's Eve. And that was a major, major accident. And then the Noble Discoverer, which is their other rig, which will also be returning with them this summer as well. It's just farther behind the Polar Pioneer. That one also had tons of problems as well, and was actually is owned by the contractor Noble Drilling, which was... they were charged with 8 felonies related to their 2012 Arctic foray in Alaska. And that included, just really basic, Coast Guard failure to communicate with the Coast Guard and keep up with safety logs and inspection logs. Their containment dome as well, which is a part of their oil spill response equipment, was actually crushed like a beer can in 2012 as well. They're actually were testing that off the coast of Washington, I believe a couple weeks ago. The Arctic Challenger is the name of that dome. They were testing that off the coast of Washington, which, of course, that's not the Arctic. So Shell sticks to its guns that they are improving the safety of these rigs and the equipment, but really all we have to look at is how disastrous 2012 was for them. And, of course, that nothing can really prepare you for drilling in the Arctic, which is a wildly unpredictable climate, and testing off the coast of Washington is not drilling in the Arctic. So it's a really urgent concern that a major disaster could happen this summer, and the Obama administration has already predicted a 75% chance of a major oil spill if they drill up there in the Chukchi Sea. So it's honestly just a disaster waiting to happen, and Greenpeace and a lot of other groups are not going to let that so unknown in the lead up to them going to Alaska this summer.
So I know, listeners, I've been following this, and I certainly, if you haven't already looked at the Greenpeace website and followed the whole story, the video is just amazing. Be sure to have a look at that and follow along with the progress of this effort, this action to stop the drilling in the Chukchi Sea. Has got to stop. What? Just before we let you go, Cassidy, could you let listeners know what to do to as aid and your efforts and stand in solidarity with you?
Sure. So, like I said, Shell's rigs are on their way to Seattle. They're actually stopping first in Port Angeles, which is, I think, about 3 hours away from Seattle, for maintenance and repairs and all that. So there's going to be a lot to do in Seattle once they get here. So, you know, on our website, we'll obviously have that information. But most urgently, actually, at the end of this month, on April 26th, we're having a rally in Myrtle Edwards Park in Seattle. Again, that's April 26th, it was a Sunday at 2 p.m. Greenpeace's executive director, Annie Leonard, who is a native of Seattle, will be speaking. And we're working with other groups as well. We'll have a lot of great speakers. And so that will be a really great opportunity for everybody to kind of come together and voice their opposition before the rigs actually arrive in Seattle. So yeah, I encourage people to go to that and to check our website, greenpeace.org, for more information on how to get involved in Seattle. And then also ShellKnow is the hashtag people are using on Twitter. So if people are on social media, they can look that up and see what the community is saying about this issue. So we're really excited to now be moving into Seattle and work with the amazing people here to raise awareness about Shell's plans and what's in store this summer.
Cassidy, thank you so much. You've been very generous with your time. We really appreciate hearing from you. And we will keep listeners informed, as always. Place links on the website and continue to follow the story. Be sure to have a look at the video. It's just astounding. Thanks again for that, Cassidy Sharp, of course, with the Arctic Co-Coordinator with Greenpeace. Thanks again for that, Cassidy. And now we return to a couple of we've got headlines to cover in the last few minutes of the show today, here very locally and of interest perhaps to those who follow weather in a conscious and avid manner. A small tornado touched down yesterday afternoon in the parking lot of a Lane Community College's main campus. One student was between classes and he was sitting in his vehicle with a female companion when he noticed that large branches were behaving in an uncharacteristic spiral flight pattern. And then he noticed that his vehicle was lifted about 8 feet off the ground. He, of course, it hovered for a moment and then crashed down to earth. Bystanders came over and asked him if he was okay. He said that it seemed to be all right, started up the car, and drove away. Now, Inside Climate News has revealed that a key leader of oil and gas industry front groups that oppose new fracking regulations may have been playing both sides of the issue. In an investigation into the funding of the Environmental Defense Fund, right? You get those envelopes in the mail all the time. I know I do. Work on oil and gas regulation. Inside Climate News discovered that a key EDF funder had hired a consulting company, FTI's David Blackman, to promote fracking regulations. That's right, to promote fracking. They'd hired this guy, the Environmental Defense Fund did. There goes your money, right? Unbeknownst to his employer, Blackman is a long-time, perhaps noticed to his employer, Blackman is a long-time oil industry consultant who is paid to oppose regulation of the fracking industry. The funder in question is the Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation. And, of course, that was established by George Mitchell, also a.k.a. the father of fracking, right? George Mitchell owned and operated Mitchell Energy, first company to combine horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing in the Barnett Shale. And that indeed is what sparked the shale revolution. Oh, a lot more. Take a look inside Climate News. And if somebody not from your country commits a crime against somebody not from your country in another country, should the courts in your country, stay with me here, have any jurisdiction over the issue? Okay. That's the question that we're going to think about here. With remarkable prescience, the question was posed by Shell Oil's own legal director back in 2012. Remarkable because it's pretty much what that very same company is now attempting to try and stifle the voices of millions of people who've spoken out and taken action against Arctic drilling. Shell is asking the courts in Alaska to issue a draconian injunction against Greenpeace USA to force the crossing to stop. That's it. Full circle. There's a whole lot more, many, many more headlines where those came from. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, April 15th, 2015. Kate Welch engineered the show for us today. Thanks for that, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, Black and Brown Lives Matter. Activists take to the streets all over America, protesting a pandemic of out-of-control police violence. And we remember the legendary writer, revolutionary, and thinker Eduardo Galeano, who died this week at age 74. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.